with Adam Carrico, and you're listening to 60 Frames Per Second, Episode 14. This is a podcast for the latest in video games. In today's episode, we talk about a ton of news, and not all of it is about the 360, believe it or not. We have everything from more 360 comparisons, revolutionary rumors, touchable controllers, the next Unreal Tournament game, and my review of the ported Half-Life 2 for the Xbox. Get ready, because you are running at 60 frames per second. Welcome back to another edition of 60 FPS. That intro music was from the band No Less Than Everything song, The Problem of Stuff. He sent it to me from Podcast Pickle, which I am now on. It is an excellent service for podcasters and podcast listeners. It's kind of like Odeo and Podnova in that sort of vein, and it's just really great. I'll link to the No Less Than Everything's MySpace music page in the show notes, and the Podcast Pickle feed under my feed link. This week, I got really close to a 360. Best Buy did get a shipment of around 24 at our area this Sunday, as the rumor had it, and it was true, but I wasn't able to stay all night and had to go early in the morning. The line already had over 30 people, even though it was way early in the morning, before the sun was up and everything. I didn't want to have to wait just around 4 hours just to get them to say I wasn't going to get one. Oh well, I have a huge list of stores that I'm calling every day. I've learned a lot through all these stores. Walmarts and Sam's Clubs in my area get shipments in every night, around 12, and they unload them throughout the night. So if you call them around 2 in the morning, which is early, and then again whenever you wake up, just in case, then you might be able to get some info and see if they have any and run over there real fast. Toys R Us I'm still not sure about, and the same with Circuit Cities. I called them that I can't really get a bunch about when they get theirs. Best Buy will probably get bigger shipments, because Microsoft likes them better, I guess. But I bet that they will have to make it another deal like the Sunday, where it's big and advertised in a rumor, and then they have a lot of people waiting in line for it. GameStop and EB Games, I don't even bother, because they're the only ones with pre-orders backed up around here. I have a feeling I might get one in the middle of the week, since a rumor from someone who works at Walmart said that they might get some on Wednesday around here in my area. Hopefully I get lucky and just snag one before anybody else does. Anyway, today's episode is big on the news and cool stuff. Next week's episode will be all about the games themselves that you might not have ever played. The best part? Most of them are free, with others having demos. Be ready for some awesome stuff to do while you stay on hold for 20 minutes to get a 360. Also, I got Half-Life 2 and finished it last week, and now I'm ready to give you a full review of the game. This is, of course, the new ported Xbox version. I won't be reviewing a year-old game. And I really am going to love doing this review. In the mail, I got an Xbox demo disc from the Xbox magazine with a few demos, but none will compare to full auto on the 360. I can't wait to try it out, since at E3, this was the only game that I really loved. Since we've already talked about the 360, I'll go ahead and start with the news on it. We've all seen the comparisons of last episode I talked about of the Xbox and 360 games that are out on both systems. What about the advantages of playing Xbox games on the 360? I mean, Bungie said in their weekly What's Update a while ago that Halo 2 looked nicer than ever in HD. Will the other games do that as good, or either do that at all? GameStop has posted some pictures of videos of backwards compatible titles running on both systems. I will have to say, in HD, these games look a lot better. It isn't really noticeable when you first play them, I'm sure, but in comparison, there's a lot that is clear and distinct, and a lot smoother of the models, less of the jags around it. There are only 4 pictures from 4 games, but there's a video in the sidebar with Halo 2 on both. It has like a split screen type thing. The top's a 360 and the bottom's an Xbox. It didn't show on Halo any gameplay, just cutscenes. I really would have liked to see what some of the gameplay looked like on both of them. Really, when you're playing, you won't notice a huge difference. But like in the overall feel, it should be more immersive and the graphics should be a whole lot better. And with our society being so obsessed with graphics now, it should be a great thing for all of them. I mean, think about it. If Halo 2 doesn't have jagged edges, which is just really a minimal upgrade, but it looks really clear and everything, it wasn't even made for the 360 in the first place, then Halo 3 should look a whole lot better than that. Speaking of Halo 3, a new Stunt Mutt comic has come out, and he's talking about it in it. I don't know how many of you read online comics, but I like getting a strip or two a day from all of them. I currently read Control-Alt-Delete and can't wait for its animation series soon. Penny Arcade, that Half-Life comic that used Gary's mod, and I just started reading VG Cats. I've only read a couple of those, but it seems to be pretty cool. These are really just a sample of all those I do read. Stunt Mutt is dedicated to Halo, and every single strip is simple yet funny. Take this one for example. It talks about a rumor saying Bungie won't be making Halo 3. Then they imagine what would happen if like another developer took over. I don't want to give it away, but they're all funny. Using pretty famous developers and games themselves to make just funny jokes, if you've ever played the games or know anything about them. Links in the show notes, and check this one out for yourselves. It's a really cool comic. You think you have the coolest, biggest collection of Xbox swag? I think you should think again, because a guy at Lowdown411 has taken pictures of one person's Xbox collection, and it's crazy. He has everything from Xbox shoes, beta discs, every demo from Xbox magazine ever, posters, drinks, even a cardboard model of an Xbox 360 hard drive. I bet all this would go for thousands on eBay. But why would he sell it? He also has a ton of faceplates that Lowdown got in another post, and they have E3, XO5, and more. Now he just needs a Launch Team 360 to make his collection full. Do you have an awesome gaming collection, or a ton of games, merchandising, or something else? Send in your picks to 60fpshost@gmail.com so we can all see them. Now, a bit of comic relief for those bummed out for not getting a 360. You know you're not alone, with millions like you still trying to get one, me included. But did you know there was someone special sitting in with you? Steve Ballmer of Microsoft doesn't even have a 360 yet. He says that management does not get a free 360 due to some rules. If he does get one, it will come straight from his income. I think it's funny, and a lot of sites are saying he is out buying one, like out buying one for his kids for Christmas, but I really doubt he is. If he really wanted, he could go over to the Xbox place at Microsoft and just ask for one. He might have to pay for it, but he could get one easier than most of us could. Oh well, maybe next time, Steve. The Xbox 360's backwards compatible list has been updated, and this time it includes Tom Clancy games, mainly for Splinter Cell. When it was first released, it caused problems for Halo 2 in widescreen mode, giving big black bars in it for some reason. Now that's been fixed, you can play cool older games on the 360. Not a huge bit of news unless you're a Sam Fisher fan and still play the Spies vs. Mercenaries online a lot. Which brings me to my next bit of big news for all of you guys. Splinter Cell 4, Splinter Cell Double Agent, details have finally emerged. It appears guesses that Sam was going bad as an undercover work. It appears guessing that Sam was going bad as undercover work were true. Since his daughter died by a drunk driver, he is in major grief and is pulled from the third echelon by Lambert. He begs for a position back though, and gets to be a non-official cover operative. He is put into a criminal organization, not as an enemy this time, but as a friend to get inside information. If he is found out, though, he's on his own, and that's probably not a good thing in any organization like that. So, Sam, to get in one of these organizations, has to become a criminal. directed moments will be included. And according to Ubisoft, these are things that might be like in a cutscene before that you now have control of, so like swimming or parachuting. Online mode will be similar, but with 3-on-3 matches for Spies vs. Mercenaries and a ton of new guns and gadgets. The co-op mode has been expanded to include a full campaign and challenges. In the third one, Chaos Theory, my favorite mode was co-op play. I didn't have Xbox Live whenever I rented the game, but sitting with a friend working together to accomplish a task like was addicting. At one point, we just had to turn off the Xbox because we were hurting so much after prolonged play. This game will be great when it comes out, and hopefully that's very soon, around spring of 06. Advertising has been big on the 360, and not just for Microsoft. Other companies are making faceplates to support themselves, as I've talked about in another episode. It was just a matter of time before they made their own 360 kiosks. Adidas is the first on board with their kiosk that has FIFA 06 playing. Right now, it's only available in Japan, but I'm willing to bet something like this might show up in non-gaming related stores, like a Hibbett's, with a game like Madden or NBA Live, which has a greater audience in the US. Pics of this kiosk in the show notes. Speaking of Japanese 360s, it's finally out over there. This was the country Microsoft was trying and trying to push into getting one, and they really wanted to be big over there. They have the Xbox Lounge, giant Xboxes and controllers, which just look awesome, and even green Xbox gumballs. For the first Xbox, as we all know, it flopped. Bad. Now for the 360, it again flopped, this time even worse than before. Of course, there aren't a ton of games that the Japanese enjoy the most. With no RPG and DOA 4 making a noticeable absence, what would they pick up? Yes, I know that Final Fantasy XI's beta was included, but in Japan, everybody already has that game. The best-selling game there was Ridge Racer 6, which ironically was the worst one here in North America. I guess after games like DOA 4, Blue Dragon, and more come out, people might want to buy the system. If we get some cool Japanese developers on board, maybe we might get some cooler games. Just think of what the marketplace could do for RPGs. You can make micropayments for a quick potion or a powerful sword that you cannot get anywhere else in the game. We'll just have to wait and see whenever games like Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion come out. What other games besides those Japanese ones will be coming next year, or maybe later? GameSpy has put together a list of games that are coming out for the new system. It includes those like Gears of War, Saints Row, Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, Elder Scrolls IV, but also other cool ones like Prey, Mass Effect, Alan Wake, and of course Halo 3, which still hasn't been announced. Each game has a description and info, along with screens. If you want to narrow down your game watching to see which ones are going to be the coolest, check out this list. One game that you won't be getting anytime soon, though, is Shenmue 3. Yu Suzuki says in Game Informer magazine that there will be no Shenmue 3. But don't be sad, all you Shenmue fans. The online version should come out in 2006. I've never played any of the Shenmue games, but apparently they have a huge cult following, and that's not very good news for all of you fans. One cool thing about the Xbox Live Arcade was downloading demos of all the games. If you didn't want to do anything, all you had to do was find a cool game and just sit and watch the screen download the demo. It usually took a while, not terribly long since they're simple games, but I would unplug the Xbox from my TV and watch something while I waited, or did something else. With the 360, many people are apparently frustrated with the fact that when you're downloading something, you can't play a game or do something else. You have to wait. I don't see why Microsoft did that. It makes the hard drive be dedicated for this one task, and the internet to be dedicated for this one task. But why can't you just go ahead and play a single player game and save your game data? Surely you can just save two things on there at once. it's a bigger deal downloading, like, huge 600 megabyte demos on the Xbox Live Marketplace than it was for downloading a little demo for an arcade game, like, downloading a little demo for an arcade game. If you want to download the Xbox Live Arcade games, I'm sure it's not as long, but still a pain. If you're going to sit there and download all this stuff, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting. Again, I would just unplug it from my TV and just do something else and wait for it. And if it, like, if you don't want to do anything else, I wonder if it has the pause thing. Like, in Xbox Live Arcade, there's a way to pause it while you wait. It was really good, but it just, if you wanted to, like, just do, download 15 minutes and get back on, and then download it again later, if you're not in a big hurry to get it. Alright, that is the least amount of 360 news we have had in a while. Now we're going to go on to the news on the Sony front. Sony said that the PS3 is on track for a spring 06 launch. Seems a little fast considering we haven't played one for it yet. Larry Probst, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but of EA, said he was expecting it to release in the fall of 06 instead. I would agree with him more because it gives another E3 for hype, and the PS3 doesn't really need as much hype because they already have a huge fan base, but it would help along it with a lot of gamers. Of course, it won't come out until Blu-ray is completely ready and won't cost an arm and a leg to get the drives on the PS3. Part of the console's success lies into Blu-ray to succeed. The PS2 was big in Japan because it was a DVD player, which was very new and cheap at the time, that could play games too, which later led into a great gaming console. Now it's more of a game console that you can play Blu-ray discs on the side. If Blu-ray is cheap, then I imagine us gamers will be fine either way, because I really don't want to pay $1,000 to get a PS2 or a PS3. Because I don't want to have to pay for the disc drive and the game console itself. And then the discs themselves could be like $70 games. And that even $60 games on the 360 is a lot. One new game announced for the PS3 is Unreal Tournament 2007. We knew that an Unreal game was coming to the system, but not the one also available for the PC. The game looks beautiful on the computer, but I don't know how it will stack up on a game console. The biggest issue is control. For a game like Unreal Tournament, a keyboard and mouse is a must. You need the precision, and it's so fast that you're not going to be able to control it as much. For something like Halo, I'm fine with a controller because it's more comfortable and just, you can play and get good aiming with how the control's set up. Joystick asked readers in a poll which they liked better for an FPS, and the PC gamers came out on top, liking the keyboard and mouse setup. What do you like? Is it really a hard choice? But go ahead and email me what you think. Will this game roll with a DualShock, or will it fall short like Killzone 1? Another thing is that Sony doesn't have a unified online service. Why not put this on a Revolution or 360, where we have Nintendo Wi-Fi connection and Xbox Live, because Unreal Tournament is a huge online game. I guess we'll wait and see what happens. New screenshots in the show notes, and these screenshots are beautiful. Speaking of Killzone, Guerrilla Games, the developer of it, has been acquired by Sony. This is a smart move, since Killzone 2 is going to be one of the most anticipated titles for the PS3, probably launching with the system. On one website, they said they are working on 3 different products for Killzone. One, of course, on the PS3, and the other's been announced for the PSP, which would be pretty cool, and I don't know how they're going to get the controls right. But the final one, nobody knows. Could we get 2 versions? Or are they already working on a Killzone 3 as we speak? It might be another, like, spin-off of Killzone, like a tactical-type game, or something weird happening. But no, there's no way to tell this early. It can't be for another system since they are now property of Sony. I'm really wondering what this is going to be for. Now we're going to talk about Nintendo. This week was big in rumors for the new Revolution system. We know the Revolution will launch next year, but when next year? Will it come out around the time of the PS3? That might be good, because then you'll have to fight off some of the PS3 people, but then some of the PS3 people are going to have to fight off you. If the graphics are just as good as the PS3 and you have a new way to control, then it's going to be cool. And you're going to really have to get the hardcore audience. Or it could take a fall launch around the 5th anniversary of the GameCube and get it a lot of kids' Christmases, and then not around a big time of competition with the PS3, so a more casual audience can get to it. I personally think it's going to come around Thanksgiving, and so do many developers, because that gives, like the PS3, a lot of time to make it, another E3 to get ready for, and of course they're getting ready for it, as I said in the note from last episode I talked about it. And I don't know if it'll launch. It might launch that summer, like a month or so after E3. But we're really going to need to get some playable games before we can tell a lot. I'm not sure how long it is and how close it is to ending its development. The next rumor is that the Revolution won't be as powerful enough to compete with the next-gen systems. It's nothing new, but some new stuff has come out on it. I mean, I agree that Nintendo is going to be pushing more affordability and innovation with the new system instead of pumping out nice graphics like the PS3. It should be priced around $150 or even a mere $100. That's the rumor, of course, but I think that if Nintendo wants to make a lot of money on it, they should go for $200. It's still going to be cheaper than an Xbox 360 and a PS3, but it's not going to be too low where they're not going to make a ton of money. But a patent filed by Nintendo could be good for gamers on the Revolution who are thinking that it just won't be looking very nice with this not very good system. The patent is about displacement mapping, a technique that would allow games to have a low polygon count but great graphics. This would mean less power is needed to run a beautiful game. If less power is needed, why would Nintendo put in an extra power, extra RAM, and a better graphics card, all that, just to make it more expensive and not get as much profit off of it? If it isn't really new, this technique, but Nintendo will optimize it for their own use, and now it's patents, it's theirs. If this technique can make a game like Half-Life 2 play on an average consumer's computer without optimization, we have a technique that could win the console war in terms of graphics. If Resident Evil 4, the best-looking console game of last generation, could be modified to where it looks better with displacement mapping and takes less power, then you could do a whole lot more. One of the biggest innovations this year is definitely the Revolution controller. IGN has a Java app that allows you to take the Revolution controller and give it a good look over and turn it around, zoom in, and all that. It gives a kind of feel for the controller and how it will play. It's super high res, so if they scratched it or even put a little thumbprint on it, you'd definitely tell. Even zoomed in, it's a great picture. It also comes in silver, black, green, and red, along with the original white. Another video has popped up showing some concepts for the controller. This time it is on some regular Nintendo titles instead of Half-Life 2. It shows some technical stuff, like where the pointer is, etc., but also adapts GameCube games to play with the controller. Some of these games include Super Mario Sunshine, where you guide him around with the pointer, and you make him jump by just flipping up the controller. F-Zero GX, where you of course hold the controller like a steering wheel for control, but I'm not sure if you could point to the direction you want it to drive for a different control. It is possible, I'm sure. And another one's what could be a first-person Zelda title, reminiscent of the Elder Scrolls series. And if the Revolution can do something like that, that might be a new direction the Zelda series could go. Another one shows what could be a way to control real-time strategies. It has a few balls and he kind of circles around them and then guides them around. And it could be like the newest Pikmin title. No FPS though, but we all know how that would work, of course, with the Half-Life one. Mario Kart DS is finally out, and the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection is out with it, and it's been a hit for the title. Of course, there are its problems. For one, not all of the 32 tracks are playable online, and none of the battle courses are. A person at GS Central has found a way to make these offline courses available online. Right now, he won't tell us how he did it, but if you send him a friend request, he might play you a few rounds on one of them. The battle modes sadly do not work normally. They work, but instead they're races, which is odd on some of the maps where it's not really built to be a racetrack. Maybe we could get it updated to include these maps soon, like if Nintendo could update the firmware. I played the demo for the game at Best Buy, and it felt like one of the old school SNES titles. The recreation of older tracks was done well, with a few changes, but overall a nice touch. And the graphics, of course, aren't as good, but they're almost on par. I might get this game when it comes available around here. Another Nintendo Wi-Fi connection game is Animal Crossing Wild World. I've never played the GameCube version, but apparently in it you can get music from a guy named KK Rider. In the DS version, you can do it again. Kotaku has a list of every song he can give you on your site, and there are a lot. After you listen to a song, he might say, "Those industry fat cats try to put a price on my music, but it wants to be free." If you couldn't tell, that is Nintendo making fun of the RIAA. Does this mean if I illegally download a Mario CD off the net, or better yet, a Nintendo ROM, they won't sue me? If you live in Japan and have the game, be sure to go by one of the Touch Try DS kiosks and put a letter and present in a bottle. If you do so before December 25th, you will get a special Mario-themed furniture for your house. Why does Japan get all of this cool stuff anyway? I mean, first off, they get kiosks with demos of every game for the DS in the first place, and now they get virtual furniture. I'll be the first to admit, against the PSP, the DS kind of looks like crap. I mean, there are cool skins all over the net, and they really look cool, but I don't really want... I mean, there are a ton of cool skins on the net and all, but I really don't want something that stands out that much. I want something more subtle and cool. One guy took a temporary tattoo of Mario and put it on his DS. The coolest part is, it doesn't rub off. He just took a temporary tattoo, put it under a wet cloth and lamp to warm it up, and then melt on. It looks really cool. I'm looking all over for a tattoo like that, just so I can put it on my DS. I really want his Mario one because it looks awesome on the DS and kind of says something about it. Maybe if I find a temporary tattoo of a original Game Boy, I could put it on my DS like the paint from the last episode I showed. Electronic Arts is a big company in the console front, and Jamdat is a big company in the mobile front. It makes sense for both of them to merge, so some of EA's best games can go to the phone and Jamdat's on the consoles. Well, I guess merge is too good of a word for it. How about just EA buying them? After the news came to be they were together, EA's shares went down, while Jamdat's went up. Is it strange? Is Jamdat not a very good company and EA is a waste of money? And Jamdat going to a new EA company that's got a ton of money, it could help them out in their development. Acclaim has been gone now for more than a year. After they filed bankruptcy, they auctioned off all the names and rights to franchises. Howard Marks, formerly of Activision, bought the name Acclaim for around $100,000. The new/old company will be focused on bringing Korean MMOs to America. The first game, Bout, with dots after letters, so it's B.O.U.T, is a robot fighting game that will be free. The big catch is that you can buy parts for your robots with real-world cash. If it works, maybe we can get a ton of cool games over to the States. These Korean MMOs are really big for casual-type gamers. I've never been able to play one of them. I'm thinking about starting a few for the next episode and just trying them out. But if we get a lot of these cool new ideas over in the U.S., maybe more people will get into the online gaming like that. Two more people have been added to the gaming injuries category. One was another Korean man, a 38-year-old, who played the games day and night at an internet cafe with little breaks for sleeping and eating. He was brought to the hospital one night after passing out, and whenever he got there, they pronounced him dead. The other is an Iowa girl who played True Crime New York City for only 5 hours straight. She didn't die, but had a seizure. The reason was that in-game, a car was driving through the snow and snowflakes were falling on it. It acted as a strobe light, which was the cause. Her brother was playing too, but he left when it was her turn. She stayed and watched him. Now she plays an hour or two and then takes a break. The doctor said some people's brains act differently to these effects. This 14-year-old girl's weren't exactly in favor. EverQuest, it might be an MMO you've heard about, is being released again in a big pack. Even though the sequel is already out for like a year, they will get as much from the original as they can. EverQuest Titanium will have EverQuest and its first 10 expansions at the low price of $20. Those aren't all the expansions, believe it or not. It's a total of 11 games, but it will keep you busy if you are new to the series. If you think World of Warcraft is too fancy and just want an old-style game from 1999, check out these older titles, which the hardcore still play, believe it or not, and you can still have a good experience with them. Get this on January 11th. Another semi-popular MMO is Ragnarok Online. If people who play aren't addicted enough, a form of the game will be available on cell phones early next year. You can build up your characters on the go, and if you want, you can play it as a standalone title if you aren't into PC gaming. I think if other MMOs like World of Warcraft have a simple 2D version like this, then Blizzard might be making a few quick bucks. The only big barrier of this is having a way to keep the PC version and a cell phone version united together to where you're in the same game, or they could just make it to where they're both separate games, but you have the same character. And another thing, there's not going to be much conversation on the cell phone unless you want to type instant messages with the keypad. Second Life, yet another MMO, has a very big cult following. It is a neat game and concept where everything in the world is user-created, with other stuff being there by Linden Labs, but most of it is created by people. A blog called New World Notes is there to get the latest news in this MMO world. It isn't necessarily a fan blog of this game rocks and so on, but more of a what's going on thing. One post talks about a man who is putting up in peach bush signs all over his property to spread the message. Another is for a real travel agency that gives you like flight times and information and more in the game itself, but the travel agency, as I said, is a real travel agency. People must be really addicted to this game. I have read over a lot of his posts, and it's weird how this is like a real world for them all. Linden Labs must be really proud of getting a cult following like this. If you're part of the media, then go to the E3 website right now. Registration is started now, and you can be a part of the gaming goodness this May. I still haven't decided if I'm going to be considered a major form of the press, but from past tales, E3 is easy to get into. Anyway, go now, because you will love what is store for you this May. Now we have my review of Half-Life 2 for the Xbox. It kind of got overshadowed by the Xbox 360 release right after it, but this port should not have been. First, I'm going to go after the graphics. They're alright, but come on, can't you do better than that on this console, Valve? The PC version is fantastic, and this is good, but just not up to the PC standard. That brings me to one of the biggest points in this review. The only way you're going to get the game to look that beautiful is to have a really expensive PC. The RAM you need costs more than an Xbox, and the graphics card more than a 360. Since most of us don't have that kind of computer, the graphics for the Xbox version are above average, especially for me. Now on to the physics. Everything about the PC's physics are in this game and fully intact. Nothing has been reinvented here from last November, but if you never experienced the first game, I assure you that you will play around with the physics for hours in the game. Most anything not bolted to the ground is available to grab, and with the gravity gun, you can shoot them at enemies. There's nothing more satisfying than hitting a zombie with a saw blade and cutting him in half, or knocking Combine over with a barrel to the gut, or throwing a bucket of paint to an enemy so their face turns white. The possibilities are endless. Sometimes, the physics are too good, like when you spin a blade and accidentally walk into it. They aren't for just cool killing, though. They're also used in puzzles, but not in the ordinary jump-on-a-barrel type stuff. In one part, I had to put a floating barrel under a ramp so I could jump it. A ton of variety comes in all of this. The enemy AI is also fantastic, taking cover and giving orders. Sometimes they are less than stellar, though, like when they come towards me slowly through one door after they saw me, and I walk up behind them from the back door and give them a nice crowbar to the back. There aren't a ton of different enemy models, with most every Overwatch looking the same, and the different zombie types the same, etc. That leads to another complaint. There was almost too much fighting in certain areas of the game. I liked the puzzle elements, which were hard and made you think a lot of times. There are also vehicles in the game. You have two different vehicles, an airboat and like a dune buggy thing, which both are equipped at guns at one time. They really kill easily and are fun in first-person mode to go speeding down with those. But one of the biggest complaints with the dune buggy is that it flips over easily, and whenever it does, you have to get the gravity gun to flip it over, unless I miss something in that. The story is the best part of the game. If you didn't play Half-Life 1, then you might be a little lost in it all, with some of the scientists and Barney making an appearance and talking about the story before. You won't really know what you're going after. Alex is with you a lot, and in the course of it all, you feel attached to her. At the end, it is sad what is going to happen, and you don't really get to see the end of it and what happens, with G-Man's mysterious words coming out again. The story is told without cutscenes and in gameplay, and it adds to the experience a lot, surprisingly. At the end of the game, you get this weapon, a super gravity gun thing, and I will tell you, I had some of the most fun with that weapon ever in a game. This alone should be keeping you on to the last levels. You can, like, grab enemies whenever they're coming towards you, and then throw an enemy at another enemy and knock them all over. Or just shoot them with this gun, like, a dark energy thing on it, and it just blasts them all away. One thing that had a huge, noticeable absence was multiplayer. No Xbox Live for this game. It is probably the one thing that is keeping this game from getting a 5 out of 5 for me. On the PC, you have Half-Life Deathmatch, and even better, Counter-Strike. We might get a Counter-Strike Source for the 360, like the original came out for the Xbox, but I doubt it. The game is fairly short, even with the side mission type areas. It lasted me around 12 hours, and you could beat it in a good week, which might make it a rental for some. If I had multiplayer, I would keep playing this game over and over online, but making it a longer experience. Overall, the story, sound, physics, gameplay, graphics to one degree, and more are all great. For a port of the single-player game of Half-Life 2, it has done perfectly well, and it's still one of the best single-player games this year. Lack of online is the biggest thing keeping this one from a perfect score. Half-Life 2 on the Xbox gets a 4.5 out of 5. Well, that wraps up this edition of 60 FPS. I hope you enjoyed the news and my review of a great port. If you want the show notes and direct download links, among other special info, check out 60framesper2nd.blogspot.com. To contact me with comments, questions, and more, email 60fpshost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of 60 Frames Per Second.